Let's go over the last piece that we did yesterday on Daf Mem Omid Aleph. And the Gemara says the following. Based on the Mishnah, Nimtzabav Eres Davar, Osheena Ru'uya Lovo B'Yisrael, and the Mishnah says, Eina Rashoi L'Kaima Shenema V'Losia L'Isha Isha Ru'uya Lo, Omer Av Kahana Amrisa L'Shmata T'Akavei D'Rav Zviv Minar Da. So this you'll see on the third line down from the top of Daf Memo and Alf. It's the last sugi that we learned yesterday, in the Chazor Shiv yesterday. And we have a dialogue between Rav Kahana and Rav Zvid. And Rav Kahana asks Rav Zvid, why is it that in the case of Eino Rashoi Lenosa, Eino Rashoi Lekaima, the halacha is that we suspend the mitzvah of Alosia Leisha. Why not apply a universal principle called Mese Ese Minitche Losas? Minitche Losas, the mitzvah say of Alosia Leisha should override the mitzvah Losas of Yisrei Kol. For example, Mamzeres, there's an Yisrei Lav, Lo Yova Mamzer Bekal Hashem. And Tosus, Dira Maskel Nese, which is the second Tosus here on Daf Mem Amud Aleph, asks a fine question. The Mishnah itself says that we have a separate Yalfusa of Velosi Elisha from which we derive the Miu to exclude Chayvei Lavim in the midst of Velosi Elisha. So even if there would be a universal rule of Ese Dochelosa, which we could apply here in this case, to an Isha Sheder Ruyola, he has no mitzvah at all. There's no Velosil Isha. The Torah already limited and restricted Velosil Isha to case of an Isha Ruyola. So how could Esay be Dochelosas? And in one of Tosus's answers, he says that the Mishnah has this drasha based on the extra words Velosi, but the Gemara's kasha is, why don't we darshan the Pasuk to exclude Chayvei Krisus and say there's no mitzvah of Velosi Elisha in the case of Chayvei Krisus, but Eino Chinami in the case of Mams, in the case of Chayvei Lav, and the essay would be Dochelosasa. So we could have our cake and eat it. We can, on the one hand, accept the drasha of Velosia to exclude Chayvei Krisus, and on the other hand, we can include Chayvei Lavim in this mitzvah under the principle, which is universally applicable, that Esei Dochelosasa. So the Gemara records Rav Zvid's response to Rav Kahana's question. Amal Li, he says to me, Heicham, Rinan, when do we apply the principle of Nesei Ese Venitche Los As Kigon Mila Bitzaras? To Lo Efshel Kiyumi Li Ese. There's no way that he can fulfill avoid fulfilling the mitzvah say. In other words, the mitzvah say is absolutely, unconditionally obligatory. And the very moment that he fulfills the mitzvah say and he cuts off the mila, he violates the lav of ktsitzas baheres. Now, the Gemara assumes that mila b'tzaras is a case of Ese Dochelosas. If you take a look at Tosus, Dima Maskel Kigon, and Tosus invokes a sugya in Shabbos in Rabbi Elazar de Mila, according to one Lishna in that Gemara, Tzaras is not just an Iser Losas, but in addition, it's also an Iser Ase. So why would Mila, as a mitzvah say, be Doche Ktsitas by Harris? We have a principle of Eina Ese Dochelos Sevi Ese. And Tosus answers that this is a reflection of the special significance of Mila in the constellation of mitzvahs. It's Nichrusu Aleh Yud Gimel Brisos. That upgrades Mila to a special status. And that's why the Ese of Mila is strong enough to override the Lavi Ese of Ktsitas by Harris. In other words, don't derive from Mila B'Tzaras the conclusion that Ese is Dochelosas Sevi Ese. That's not true. The exception to the rule is Mila because of Nichrusola Yud Gimel Brisos. Now, it's interesting because at the end of the day, the halacha of Mila B'Tzaras is a separate mitzvah, a separate principle, a separate halacha. It's not an application of Esei Docholos. In fact, Ein Esei Docholos Sevi Esei in this case. So why does the Gemara use Mila B'Tzaras as the paradigmic case of Esei Docholosas? It doesn't really fit under Esei Docholos. According to the rules of Esei Docholos, we would say Ein Esei Docha in this case. And Tosfos concludes that the Gemara is only mentioning Mila B'Tzaras as an example of a case where there's no possibility of avoiding the essay and at the same time avoiding the losas. You can't avoid the essay. Yefshali potem mimena. And by definition, as soon as you fulfill the essay, ipso facto, you violate the losas, as opposed to our case. Aval Hocha, the Gemara says, in the essay of Ones, of Velosia Leisha, I Omra, if she, the Nara, says, Lo Be'ina, I don't want to marry you, Mi Isa Li Essay Kla. Would there be an essay? That's a rhetorical question. Pshita, that there would not be an essay in this case. As we learned on Daf Lamed Tes Amid Beis, if she vetoes the marriage, then he doesn't marry her against her will. So the entire essay of Lo Silisha is conditional on her approving the marriage. And what does that do in terms of Esei Dochalosas? So Rashi interprets the Gemara that you'll see here, Rashi Dima Maskal Miisol Esei Klal, three lines down from Tapashta Nami Malamdin O Salomar Eina Rotsa. We'll have to teach her and guide her, in this case of a losasa, that she should refuse to marry him. Others say that this means it's efshel kaim shneya, meaning it's not like an essay like Mila, where unconditionally you're obligated in the essay, and therefore you're thrust into a situation of a head-on collision between the essay and the losasa, and it's unavoidable. And the Torah formulates this principle of Esei Dochalosa. Here, it's not necessary for the essay to be fulfilled. There's a way of circumventing the essay. Now, in the language of the Rishonim, you'll see very often that it says, quote, Yesh efsharis l'kayimus essay velo lavar al alosas. That's a little bit strange. I wouldn't say exactly Efsha Lekaimis Esse below Lavra Es Alosas. It would be more of Yesh Efshar's Li Potter Mea Esse. But in the classical Esse Dochalosas scenario, it's the Efshar Li Potter Mea Esse. And Efshal Kaimis Essay below Lavar al Alosas. So the bottom line is that the Gemara undermines the principle of Essay to Alosas in a case where you can avoid the essay. And by avoiding the essay, you avoid violating the Losas. So in the case of Anusa, it's not considered Efshel Kaim Shneim exactly, because again, it's not Efshel Kaim as HaMitzvah below Lavra Alosas, but we call it Efshel Kaim Shneim, meaning that there's a possibility of being parted from the Kiyum HaMitzvah when she says she doesn't approve of the marriage. Therefore, we will educate her, guide her, and influence her not to want to marry him. So the mitzvah will not be chal at all. And the Ramban writes that according to Rashi, if she were to say that she wants to marry him, then we would force him to marry her. Let me read it this way. Im tomar she wrote says she kansenu, yachufu osa. Ah, the Ramban has a slightly different approach here. Who are we going to force in this case? We have two options. We can either force him to marry her, or we can force her to say any roadside. And the Ramban decides to activate a principle called Mitzvah L'shmol L'dibri Chachamim, that the Chachamim are authorized and empowered to force and coerce a person to avoid a losas. And that's exactly what we're going to do in this case. The Chachamim are going to exercise their authority, and they're going to be kofer her to agree that she doesn't agree to the marriage. The Ramban himself doesn't like it. He seems to assume that from the Gemara it seems that there's no esei docha lo sase here, even in a case where she would say, I want to marry him. And therefore, the Ramban explains that this is an esei which is conditional, that makes it into an esei kal. It's a light esei, and it's not capable of being docha a lo sase. And we discussed this at great length yesterday in the Iyun Shir and around noon. But I just want to add one little Tosefis here. Lo nemar she esei docha lo sase, rak bi esei she kiyumo chamur. Esei docha lo sase is only an esei chamur. It's high up on the echelon. She'ein afsharut li'pater mimena. Says the Ramban, "Al anusa she'yichol lafkias ha'esei al yidei she'tomrei nirotza." That makes it into an esei kal, which doesn't have the power to be docha lo sase, and that would apply even if she would say she wants to marry him. Now Tosi Shonim, just to finish this up, says that since she can refuse to marry him, it means that she doesn't really have an essay to marry him. The essay is totally, exclusively incumbent upon the Ma'anes, and he should not violate this Isur of Alosasa for his essay, because she will violate a law by being married to him. And she doesn't have an essay to override that law. We're up to the Mishnah, which is about 10 lines down on the top of the Amud. Well, thank you so much. Wait, just some hot water halfway through. And let me just say a few words as an introduction to the Mishnah. We've been discussing the differences between Onus and Mefater, and let's talk about another additional distinction between Onus and Mefater. And a change and a contrast between Mefata, the din of Mefata is different than the din of Ones. In the case of a Mefuta, is Nisratza Midata Elov, is Potomitashl Maknas. What does that mean? We discussed on many occasions that in the case of a nara, since the knas is collected by the father, she has no rights to be mochel. Her mechila cannot undermine the father.
It'll come. Let's just do a problem there.
So we're going to start Yisoma. But what about the case where the father has no rights over the knas, either because he's gone, or because, according to Rabbi Akiva, if you recall, in the previous Mishnah, Nisarasav and Niskarsha, once the Nara got married, even though she was divorced, she leaves the Rishus of the father, and we're going now according to that opinion, that she collects the knas herself, that's called knas aliatzma, and therefore her mechila would be meaningful. So the Mishnah now discusses two cases where the father's out of the picture. The first case is Yisoma, he's gone, and therefore she collects the knas. And the second case is Nisarsim and Nisgarsha, according to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva the Mishnah, that she collects the knas herself. In these cases, there's going to be a fundamental difference between Ones and Mefata. Because in the case of Mefata, there's an implicit mechila by virtue of the fact that she consented to this bia. And even though if the father were in the picture, Hamachi would be meaningless because she has no right to be mochel his money. But now that he's out of the picture in one of these two scenarios, she is the sole owner, so to speak, of that knas, and therefore she could be mochelis. And herein lies the difference between onus and mafata. In the case of onus, she was never mochelis, so she will collect the knas. In the case of mafuta, on the other hand, there was an implicit mechila, and she doesn't collect knas. That's according to the Tanna Kamma, Rabbi Lozer Omer, ha'ones chayov v'amafata potter. Now, what we're a little bit unclear about is there any machlokas in the Mishnah? We're going to interpret the Mishnah thusly, that Rabbi Lozer is clarifying what would be the din in these two cases. And although the Mishnah in the Reisha formulated these two cases, but the din itself and the distinction, the contrast between onus and mafata was not spelled out. That's what Rabbi Lozer wants to do. He's going to come and spell out the difference between onus and mafata. In the case of onus, since she was not mochelis in any shape or form, she collects the knas. In the case of mafata, as we said before, there's a tacit mechila, and she could not collect knas.
Excuse me, I'm confused on this Mishnah on Daf Mem. Is this two cases?
Yeah, two different Yudema? Cases.
Because I would agree he has
two
one
different
case.
Cases. Number one, the father's out of the picture because he's gone. And number two, the father's out of the picture, again reflecting the Shita Rabbi Akiva, if you recall, that in Sarasin and Uskasha, she leaves the Rishus of the father.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Omar Rabba Barbachan Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lozer, Rishitas Rabbi Akiva, Rabbo Amora. The Omar, Yeshla Knasu Knasoli Atzma. That this statement in the Mishnah is a reflection of Rabbi Akiva's view that in a case where the father is out of the picture, for example, Nisarsav and Nisgarsha, because again, that's the unique sheet of Rabbi Akiva, that Nisarsav and Nisgarsha, she now steps out of the reshus of her father and she collects the knas herself, is therefore, we can postulate a difference between onus and mafata, as we discussed earlier. However, if you took the opinion of Rabbi Yossi HaGalili, he holds that a Narish and Assassin is Garsha doesn't have Knas at all, then our mission of Rabbi Lozer would be totally meaningless. How could Rabbi Lozer say that in the case of Ones, she collects the Knas? There is no Knas, because if you recall, Rabbi Yossi HaGalili had a drasha, the Pasuk says, when Asan Lavi Ad Nara, Nara Velomesa. And there is no Knas in the case of a Nara that dies. But it's okay. Don't get nervous, because Rabbi Elazar is actually a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. So that's good news. So the Gemara asks me, my, how do you know that in fact Rabbi Lozar holds like Rabbi Akiva, that Nisarsav and Nisgarsha Knas Aliatzma? It could be possible, and this is what Chaim, you were touching on this possibility before, that the Mishnah should be read without a comma, and we're talking about a Nara Yisomosh and Nisarsav and Nisgarsha. Not a Nara whose father is alive and she was Nisarsav and Nisgarsha, because Rabbi Lozer would agree that in such a case she reverts back into the Rishus of the father, but she was a Yisoma. And the Gemara clarifies, Mida Ketani Yisoma, since the Mishnah added the word Yisoma, and then it says Nisarsav and Nisgarsha, we should read it as a Yisomosh and Nisarsav and Nisgarsha. And Rabbi Lozer says in such a case, ha'ones chayev ha'mafata potur. So the Gemara says the following, if that's how you're going to read the Mishnah, then Yisoma pshita. There's no chiddush in the case of Yisoma. Bishlev in the case, if you view it as a separate scenario, Nisars and Nisgash is gavaldig, an amazing chiddush. We're accepting Rabbi Akiva and we're rejecting Rabbi Yossi HaGalili. But if you're talking about Yisoma, well, thank you so much. then the question becomes pshita. In the case of pitui, there's no father because she's a yisoma, the father's gone, and she consented to have this beer. There's a built-in mechila. So then yisoma itself would seem like what we call a knacker chiddush, meaning it's not much of a chiddush. But if we separate yisoma as a separate case, then yisoma becomes just like an introduction. Yisoma, and now we have a halachic yisoma, not a metzias of yisoma, which is called nisarsim and nisgarsha, and that's a big chiddush. And what the Mishnah is really saying is that nisarsim and nisgarsha is to be equated with yisoma. Elohaka mashma. This is the thrust of the chiddush of the Mishnah. The narish and nisarsim and nisgarsha ki yisoma. My yisoma. In the case of Yisoma, it was crystal clear that Knosa Liatzma, and therefore we would differentiate between a Pitui situation where there is no Knas because of the built-in Mechila, as opposed to Ones. Is Af Narish and Isarsim is Garsha, Knosa Liatzma, even though she has a father, but nevertheless she leaves the Rishus of the father, and she collects the Knas herself. And she has the same status as the Yisoma. So Rabbi Lezer is telling me, that in two different scenarios, we're going to differentiate between Onus and Mefata. One is the case of Yisoma, where the father's out of the picture physically, and the other case is Nara Shenis Arsim and Isgarsha, where, reflecting the Shita of Rabbi Akiva, the father is out of the picture halachically.
I'm sorry, I'm confused by another thing. Yisoma, is that... Does it matter whether we're talking about the time of the din? In other words, her father was alive when she was raped, but now at the court case she's a yisoma, or do we mean a yisoma at the time of the rape? Or does it matter?
I don't know. We'll have to take that under advisement.
Okay.
Omar Rabbi Zera, Omar Rabba Bar Shila, Omar Rabba Hamduna, Saba, Omar Rabba Adab Bar Rabba Rav, Halacha Karabba Loz. In other words, Nisarsha and Misgarsha, we're going to differentiate between Onus and Mefata. And this is all based on Rabbi Akiva, the Rebbe of Rabba Lozar, who holds that in the case of Nisarsha and Misgarsha, since she leaves the Rishus of her father, therefore Knosa Li Atzma. Kari Rav Allah de Rabbi Lozar Tuvyona de Chachima Chakime. So when Rav made this statement, he not only accepted the Shita of Rabbi Lozar, but he gave him an accolade, he gave him a praise, and he says he's one of the most fortunate of the Chachamim because he accepted the Shita, which is the best of all shitas, reflecting the shita of Rabbi Akiva in the previous Mishnah. And what he wants to point out here, Rav, is that there's another version of Rabbi Akiva. If you recall, Rabbi Akiva in the Braisa was of the opinion that even after Nisarsim and Nisgarsha, nothing changes. She is still in the Rishus of the father. He collects the Knas. And if he collects the Knas, obviously that's applicable even in the case of Yisoma. There's no Mechila if he collects the Knas. So that Rav is excited about Rabbi Lazar because Rabbi Lazar is reflecting the Shita of Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah. And Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah says, V'nasan la'via na'ra, which means that if she's alive, then he, the father, has rights to collect the knas. But v'lo avianet hamesa, which means that if she dies, then the knas reverts to the one second. So again, in the case of Yisoma, so the father dies. And what happens? There's no v'nasan l'avia nara because he's gone. So she collects the knas. Now we have a case of nisarsa v'nisgarsha. And if we accept Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah, then it means that just like in the case of Yisoma, the father's out of the picture and she steps up to the plate, so too in the case of nisarsa v'nisgarsha. So it means that when the Torah says v'nasan lavia nara, she has a father, v'nas yesh la av, and then the knas goes to the father. But what the Torah is implying is that the father has rights to the knas because he's alive and well. But if he's not alive, then she collects the knas. Now we have another pasuk. The pasuk says not only v'nasan lavia nara, but it says nara sherlo orasa. So we're going to learn the words asher lo orasa in the latter part of this verse, in the same way that we interpret the words v'nasan lavia nara in the beginning of this verse. That just like v'nasan lavia nara implies that in the case of Yisoma the father's not alive, she collects the knas, so too in the case of Asher Lo Rasa, implying that the father gets the knas because she's Lo Rasa, but if she was Orasa, then the father doesn't get the knas in Knosa Liatzma. And this is all based on the Ritva's interpretation of this line in the Gemara, Tuvyana de Chakime. In other words, why did Rav get so excited about accepting Rabbi Lazar in our Mishnah, who's based on Rabbi Akiva in the previous Mishnah, because the pasuk reads very smoothly according to Rabbi Akiva. Should I go over that one more time? The pasuk starts by saying v'nasan lavia nara, implying that if he's not alive, then she collects the knas. And then the pasuk continues and says asher lo orasa, which we should learn the same way, that if she would have been Orasa, then the father doesn't collect the knas, but she collects the knas. So there's an exact mirror parallel between the two.
And this is the halacha. That's
and that's how Rav paskens. Now we're going to study the second Mishnah on this daf. And this is a reflection of what we learned earlier on daf lamites. If you remember, there were payments and penalties that go beyond Chamishim Shekel, and that was called Boshes Upagam. And our Mishnah wants to know, how do you evaluate Boshes Upagam? Ezu Boshes Hakol Lefi HaMavayish VaMizvayish. There's a subjective evaluation, and again there are many different interpretations here about evaluate the knas. I'm sorry, how you evaluate the payment of boshes. So we'll just mention one interpretation. Again, there's a long discussion in the Rashash and the Yamshel Shlomo and others, but Rashi seems to be learning it this way, that if the mevayish is an adam chashuv, then it's less of a busha. So if the in the case of Onus and Mefate, if the Boel was a chash of a person, for some reason, again I'm not getting into this, it's less of an embarrassment, less of a humiliation. And Rashi seems to take this a step further. If he's low on the echelon, that's called an Adam Zolel, then once again that's not such a severe humiliation. The most severe humiliation according to Rashi is what we call an Adam Beinoni. And that's called Boshto Gidola. But it also says Lefi HaMizbayesh. That's a little bit easier. The Mizbayesh, let's assume it's the father in most cases. We're not talking about a Yisoma. So then if he's an Adam Chashuv, then his level of Boshes is that much greater. And the payment is therefore going to be a stiff payment. You understand that if somebody is up there in the higher echelon and this happens to his daughter, you know, that's a really big busha for him. So in any event, the determining factor of how much exactly is paid on the boshes is reflection of the chashivus of both the mevayesh, the boel, and the mispayeshes of the nara, or in the case where there's a father, the father. So that's called boshes. What about pagam? Pagam is what we call nezek, which means we evaluate or on the market. Is Roman Osaki ilu hi shifcha nimkeres b'shuk kama isa yofa v'kama hi yofa. So how much was her value on the shuk devaluated as a result of this pe'ilah. And the difference is going to be paid by the bo'el because of the pagam that lowers her value, and that's called pagam. Knas, on the other hand, is shavu b'chol adam. It's always chamishim shkolim, and that's a set price that doesn't fluctuate. And the Torah sets that as mamon katsuv. Katsuv means it's set. Now the Tana of the Mishnah adds something else, that there are other cases of a knas which is set by the Torah. It's not subjective. And ones is not the only case. Kol sheyesh lo kitzva min haTorah shove b'chol adam. So if it's a kitzva, if the Torah sets a specific amount, for example, we'll talk about shloshim shel evan in just a second, then all the subjective factors are totally irrelevant. So for example, if a person owns a shor ha'muad and he was negligent, as a result the shor killed a person. So let's say the shor in this case killed an Eved Kenani. So the Torah says he pays shloshim shkolim. And that fine is set, and it doesn't reflect anything about this Eved, whether the Eved was a high class Eved and he had tremendous skills that were marketable, or he was just a dishwasher. It's irrelevant. The Torah sets up a tashlum sheyesh lo kitzva, and it's shavu l'chol adam. So it comes out that according to our Mishnah, onus and mafater have to pay boshes upagam in addition to the knas. Now, when the Torah says that you pay knas in the case of onus and mafater, maybe the knas swallows up any other payments. That's Gemara's kash. The Ema, why can't we say Chamishim Sloim Amarachmanim Mikol Mili? That the Chamishim Sloim, which is a set Momen Sheish LaKitzva by the Torah in the case of a penalty for Onis Mufata, that includes everything. Any other payments, Moshe Sufagam, is swallowed up. Where do you find a source for this Mishnah that would prove to you that the Torah says that the Chamishim Sloim is a tosefes, it's an addition to other payments, which are what we call tashlumi chavola of boshes upagam. Om Rav Zera claims that it's based on svara. It's not based on a drasha. And why is that so? Yomru bal bas melochim chamishim ubal bas et yotos chamishim. Does it make sense to say that if this girl who was victimized is the daughter of the king, she's the princess herself, she's going to collect the exact same sum as a Baset Yotos, the daughter of a rank and file citizen in the province? It doesn't make sense that in every case it's going to be set chamishim. The Torah has to consider the additional suffering in a case of a Bas Malachim. There must be an element of boshes here and pgam that's subjective and that changes. It can't be uniform and standard in all cases. It must be the chamishim shkolim is an additional payment to tashlume boshes supagam, because the nezek in the case of bas malachim is so much greater than that of the case of a bas adyotos. So Abai says this can't be true. Ihachi, if that be the case, then Gabi Eved Nami, are you going to apply the same standard to an Eved, and you're going to have to accept a shifting relative payment for the case of Shar Muad Shenogach Vaharagesa Eved? So the Torah says in Eved Yigach Hashar, if the Shar is Nogach an Eved, O Oma, is Kesef Shloshim Shkolim Yitein Ladono. So Yomru Eved Nokev Margolios, he's a very, very a sophisticated piercer of precious, what do they call them, pearls, and he's going to collect Shloshim, the meeting the Adon is going to collect Shloshim, and yet an Eved Shaosa Maisa Machat, you know, the best thing he could do, he doesn't have skilled labor, is that he could sew for him. Shloshim, and in every case, the payment is going to be Shloshim. According to you, we're going to have to find some sort of a subjective payment. Now, the Gemara is aware of a Mishnah in Bava Kamma, and the Mishnah says that Nogach Evedo Omer, no saying Shloshim Shkolim, Shloshim Sloim, Bein Shu Yofer, whether or not he's worth Me'amana, Bein Sheini Yofel Adina Echad. It's also a similar Mishnah in Erchin. So the Gemara knows clearly that in the case of Shosh and Nogach Hesa Eved, the payment is set. So it means that whenever the payment is set by the Torah, then you don't add or subtract in a relative way depending upon the value of the person. So how do you know, based on Svara, that the exception to this rule is going to be onus umefata, that in addition to the 50 shkolim, there's a payment to Bosh Supagam? So at this point, Reb Zeira has to substitute another Svara. His first Svara is aborted. Ela Omar Reb Zeira, Ilu Bo Aleo Shnayim, Echad Kedarka, V'Echad Shalo Kedarka. So let's take a case of an Ones, and there were two Ma'ansim. She was a victim of a double rape. And the first one had a relationship with her which is called Shalo Kedarka, where the Basula remained in that place. And the second one had a rape situation of Kedarka, the normal situation. Now, first of all, the Gemara assumes, and this is a Tosfos back on Daf Mem Amud Aleph, that Bia Shalo Kedarka generates a Chiyuv Knas. I mention this because the Rambam has a unique Shita that there's no Knas in Onus Mafata unless it was a Bia Kedarka. But this Sugi reflects the Shita of Tosus and other Rishonim, all the Rishonim, that even Shalo Kedarka generates a Chiyuv Knas. The second one is also Chayv Knas because she's still a Basula. And why is that? Because the first one was Boel HaBila Shalo Kedarka.
So even though the Gemara lists Kedarka first and Shalo Kedarka second, the chronology is the opposite?
Right. The Gemara is just telling you in general that there were two Boelim and there was one Bia Kedarka, one Shalo Kedarka. But the Gemara wants to know how would we compare the element of Pagam as a result of these two beers. It would seem that Yomru, should we say, how is it that they both pay the same Chamishim Shekel? This doesn't make sense because Baal Shlema Chamishim, Baal Paguma Chamishim. How could they both pay the same amount?
So even Kedarka, with the Vatulim left in place, she's already Paguma. Shalo Kedarka, I'm sorry.
Right. Okay. Shalo Kedarka means that he took her from a state of Lo Nifgama, that was a state before his rape, to the state of Nifgama. So she's already a Paguma as a result of this Bia, again, because the Halacha recognizes this Bia as a Bia. Now the second one, who is Baal Kedarka, he's already being Boel Paguma because she had already had a Bia Shalo Kedarka, and he too pays the same identical Chamishim Shkolim. If the Pagam of the first Boel was a Pagam of a Shlema, of a woman who was totally, you know, pure, and she had no Pagam, no blemish whatsoever, his Pagam is that much greater than the Pagam of the Sheni. And logically we would say there should be a difference reflected in the price, in the penalty, in the amount of money that each one of these two should pay respectively. There should be a difference between them. How do we justify that difference if the Torah is saying that there's Chamishim Shkolim and that swallows up all the payments? The answer must be, says Rabbi Zeira, that there's going to be an additional payment that reflects Boshes Upagam, And that reflects the difference between the first boel and how much he has to pay, because he took a shleima meter into paguma, and the second boel, who was already boel a paguma. So the levels of pagam and boshas are totally different. And therefore, there's got to be a reflection in the amount that he pays. So again, Rav Zeira is still steadfast in insisting that this Mishnah is based on Svarin, it's not based on a pasuk. Only Abaye. Abaye is still an objection to Rabbi Zeir. We must have a pasuk. If you're going to tell me that it's impossible, given these distinctions, that the payment would be identical in all cases as a dover katsuv, then legabe eved nami, in the case of an eved, yomu, should we say, we could ask your svaradik a question, eved bari shloshim, eved mukashchin shloshim. If the eved that was killed was a full, healthy, you know, robust Eved, so you pay the same shloshim, the minimum payment, and you don't add any additional payment when you compare it to a case of an Eved Mukashchin, who's worth so much less, and yet the Torah says, and we saw it in Mishnayos, that the standard uniform payment is shloshim shkolim. So once again, we see that when the Torah sets up a tashlum kavua, a davar sheyesh lo kitzva, there's no additional payments. We don't know of any additional payments in the case of shor shenogach chesa eved. So we should say the same thing in onus and mefata, that the payment is 50 shkolim, that's what the Torah said, and it's davar katzu, and we don't have to add any other payments. And therefore, the Gemara now makes a turning point and demands that we derive this conclusion from a pasuk. And here we have a number of possibilities as to what the pasuk is. Ela Amar Abaye, Amar Kra, we'll read the whole pasuk. Nasano Isha Shochevi Malavia Narach Hamishim Kesef Velosiyat Liisha Tachas Asher Ina. And Abaye claims that those three words Tachas Asher Ina are superfluous. So what is the Torah telling me by adding these words, Tachas Asher Yinisa? The Torah is now earmarking this payment of Chamishim Kesef for a certain anguish that he caused her. That's called Tachas Asher Yina. But it's pinpointing, it's sort of circumventing, it's creating a definite circumference about what this Kesef, Chamishim Kesef, is all about, and why is he paying it? He's paying it because of the Tachas Asher Yina. So, honey, these 50 shkolim is tachas hasherina, is a payment, a compensation for tachas hasherina. But there may be other elements of anguish and loss that she suffered, and the Torah goes out of its way to limit the chamishim kesef to a quid per quo for tachas hasherina, michlal, implying the ikar boshes u'pagam, that there are others suffering this additional anguish. The what we call the classic chovil b'chavero scenario, which is not inui, but rather it refers to embarrassment or the devaluation on the market, etc., etc. Those payments have to be paid. So we have a definite miut, which tells me that the chamishim kesef is for X, implying that as far as Y and Z are concerned, there has to be an additional payment. Rava Amar, Amar Kra, the Torah says in the Parsha Mones, V'nasana isha shochevi malavia na'aroch hamishim kesef. And here, the Torah adds a description of this ish. We know who the ish is. Why did the Torah have to add this description, isha shochev ima, to tell you that the chamishim kesef is because of the shochev ima, which he calls Rava Hanoas Shchiva, because he took advantage of this woman and in order to enjoy his pleasures of Hanash Shchiva. For that he has to pay Chamishim, implying that the Torah, by specifying and earmarking this money as payment for Hanash Shchiva, there are other payments that he should be paying. Mechlal de Ika Bosha Supaga. So now we have, in sum, Rabbi Zeira's approach that our Mishnah is based on Svara, and that's rejected by Abaye. And again, if we had time, but this is a Chazor issue, we would have to understand the two different arguments of Abaye and the two different presentations of the Svara of Rav Zeira. They seem almost identical. Again, that's a big to-do here in the Mefarshim. But once having rejected Rabbi Zeira's Svara, we have to supply a Yalfusa, and where the Yalfusa is Takas Shereino, that's Abai, or the Yalfusa is at Isha Shechevimo, that's Rava, we have Xeris HaKosa.
Would there be a difference? I mean, is there any difference between
absolutely
the
not. Now the Gemara has another problem here in this entire sugya, because we understand very well that the Torah tells us that the money of the knas, the 50 shkolim kesef, has to be paid to the father, v'nasan l'avia na'ara. But what about the additional payments? That's boshes upagam, or in the case of onus, there's also tsar. The Gemara says the Torah doesn't address these payments head on. There's no explicit mention. Again, we had a diuk of Abai and Rav, blah blah blah. But who says that when it says in the pasuk of Nasan Lavia Nara, etc., that it's referring not only to the payment of the knas, but to the other additional payments of Boshes Begam as well, the Emel Adida? Maybe she has a right to say, I'm a Nara, I'm an independent legal entity, and I have rights as such to collect the Boshes of Begam. I'm suffering from the Boshes, I'm suffering from the Begam. So when the Torah says, V'nasana isha shochevi ma, meaning he's paying for the Shechiva, let's go with Rav's approach, and then it says Lavia Nara Hamishim Kasa. Fine, the Torah is explicitly granting the father the rights to collect for the Shechiva. But as far as the other payments are concerned, who told you, and why should we assume that the father collects those payments? And the Gemara at this point goes into a broader analysis of the relationship between a father and his daughter who's a Nara, not within the restricted context of onus upagam and collecting monies of boshes upagam in the case of onus and mefate, but rather a pasuk that appears in Parashas Nedarim, which is called Binurea Beis Avia. This is in Bamidbar Periklam. This is the parasha which grants the father the rights to control, which means to nullify, if he so chooses, her Nedarim. And this is a reflection of the fact that she, as a Nara, is still the Rishus of her father. Now again, that's only as far as Issa Veheta is concerned. That's only as far as Nedarim is concerned. But the Gemara expands that way beyond the narrow scope of Nedarim and derives from this Pasuk Binurea Beis Avia Shekol Shvach Ne'urea Li'avia. In other words, the Torah didn't have to say Binurea Beis Avia. The Torah could have just said that the father has to be is authorized to be made for a nedarim. But why did the Torah embellish it in this very bombastic way and say binurea beis avia, that during Hanaris she's in the beis avia, and that's telling us something that goes beyond the narrow straits of nedarim, which is isa v'heter, into dini mamonos, and it's telling me that any monies that accrue to her is lavia, they go to the father, and therefore boshes begam is no different than any monies that come into her rishus. So the Gemara rejects this, and the Gemara says no. Elahad yomar avuna v'rabi nayin shemaisa bas lavia. When a girl is employed, her wages accrue to the father. And Rav Huna does not derive it from the pasuk in Hafaras Nedarim of Binurea Beis Avia, but rather Shenemar, and this is in the Parsha Mishpatim of Oma Vri, it says, V'chiyim kar ish es bitoli Oma, ma Oma ma'ase yodel rabbah, af bas ma'ase yodel avia. So the Torah here is equating the Zchus Av in his daughter and the Zchus Adon in the Oma. And just like the Adon vis-a-vis the Oma collects all her wages, so too the Zchus of the father in his daughter, he collects all her wages. Islamically, why should Rav Huna, in the name of Rav, insist on this hekesh between the schus of the Adon in an Oma and the schus of the father in his bas? Drop it. Tepuklei. Why doesn't he simply derive it? If you're telling me Binu Rebbe Savia, it's not just halacha in Isa Veheter, but rather it expands to include the entire scope of Dini Mominos, Binu Rebbe Savia, Kol Shvach Nure Levia, then Rav Huna, in the name of Rav, is employing a hekesh which is totally superfluous. Ella, but rather, no. What you have to understand is that Hafars Nedarim Hu Dechsiv, that the Torah says that as long as she's a Nara, she's in the father's house and domain only for Hafars Nedarim. But you don't have a right to go a step further and say any monetary rights and benefits belong to the father. If you want to equate Nedarim with Dini Mamonos, that you can't do. Mamonim Isur Lo Yalfinon. Neder is Isur, and there are regulations and rules and principles that apply to Isur that don't necessarily apply to Mamon. So who says that in Mamon the rights to Hamamon as a Nara go to the father? The answer must be this Hekesh of Rav Huna Amarav. V'chitei Menelef Miknasa. And if you'll argue that since in the case of Knas, in the onus of Mefata Nara situation, the Torah says explicitly, V'nasan Lavia Nara, that he collects the Knas, then let's go a step further and derive from that, then any monies that come in, for example, Bosh Subagam, should go to the father. No. Says the Gemara, that's not fair. Mamona Miknasa Lo Yalfina, just like we don't derive Mamon from Iser, we don't derive Mamon from Knas. And it could be that when the Torah says in Knas, that's a chidush shechidusha Torah b'Knas, the monies go to our father. But in the case of Mamon, where she suffered the boshes of Gam, she has rights to collect it herself. So the final maskana is, how do we know that the father collects boshes of Gam? El mistavro, we have to introduce a svara. And that is the Avia Havi, that it makes sense that the father should collect Moshe Subgam. Why? The Iboy Masala Lemenuval Umuka Shchin. That when it comes to marriage, in this rape situation, the father himself is the one who suffers the loss. Why? Because he could have gotten a very high price if he would have married her off to, pardon the phrase, some Zhlob. Zhlob here means someone who is desperate to get married. And he's going to offer the greatest dowry in the world because he's a manuval or mukashchin, you know, he's some sort of repulsive individual in terms of his, pathological manifestations on his body. So the father could really take this nara if he willed it, send her off to a marriage situation with a manuval or mukashchin and collect a bomb of money. But now as a result of this ones and pitui, her value goes down. He can't get that high price even if he marries her off to Mukashchin. So because he has biyado, he has the potential to take this money, if not for this situation, by marrying her off to so and so. Therefore, he's the one who suffers the money, the loss. If he suffers the loss, he has the right to be tovea the money. Now it could be that the Gemara finally here in its maskana is just trying to demonstrate that the father has some shaykh or some bailus on the boshes supagam. Ultimately, that doesn't exclude the nara, so I'm going to need the hekesh that we had before of kiyimkar ishes bito liyama. But the bottom line is that binurev beisavir pasuk in nedarim, that doesn't prove anything at all. Now, let's see. I don't really have too much time. I'm a little bit pressured this morning. That's why I wanted to have the shiur early. But I'm going to at least speed read to the Mishnah. And if we didn't do due diligence, then we'll fill this in tomorrow. So officially, we'll start tomorrow with the new Mishnah here on Daf Mem Amid Beis. But I may have to backtrack and first introduce the sugya pagam. We saw in the Mishnah that Pagam means Romo Sakilu Yishivchanim Keres, how much was she devaluated on the market? So the Gemara wants to know, Heichi Shaminim La, how do we make this evaluation? How do you know the difference between a Shivcha that's being sold on the market, who's a Ba'ula, as opposed to Basula? Amar Avud Shmuel Omdim Kama Adam Rotsa Litain Bein Shivcha B'sul Shivcha B'ul Shamsho. Now this doesn't make a bit of sense. So this original formulation of Shmuel, of Avud Shmuel, has to be rejected because a Ba'ula is no less capable of serving and doing malacha for the Adon than a Basula. She doesn't lose any of her energy. Frekta Gemara, Shivcha Ba'ula Shamsho, Mainafkile Mina, what difference does it make whether she's a Basula or Ba'ula Ella, but rather, what is the Pagam? Bein Shivcha Ba'ula, L'Shivcha Sheda Ba'ula Sioli Avdo, a person wants to acquire ownership of a shivcha, she can marry her off to his son, and obviously if she's a basula, he's going to pay more money for that shivcha that he can marry her off to his son. So Gemara clarifies. Uli avdo mainafke lemina. What does it be? Evet sheyeshlo l'rabo kos ruach heimena. In other words, if what difference does it make to the adon whether she's a basula or ba'ula, if the main purpose for which he's buying her, in purchasing her, is to have lados. So the Gemara answers, "Be evet sheyeshlo l'rabo koas ruach heimenu." It means that the Rav wants to do a nachas ruach to the Eved. So you see, I said I made a mistake here. I said he's marrying her off to his son. He's marrying her off to his Eved. I simply my mind is on my next year in Sanhedrin. Okay, so he wants to marry her off to an Eved, and if he really likes the Eved, he wants to give his Eved the opportunity of having a relationship with a Ba'ula. That's called Eved Sheyesh Lo L'Rabo Koas Ruach, and therefore he's going to pay more money for Basula, a Shivcha Basula, than he would pay for a Shivcha Ba'ula. So that a reflection of the price of Pagam is going to be relative to Ba'ula and Basula, and she's diminished in her value on the market as a result of this Ones and Pitu. That leads us to the Mishnah Mirtz Hashem on Daf. Thank you very much on Daf Mem Obis. Okay, then wishing everyone a great day, and thanks for obliging me with this change of schedule.